The following is an encore presentation of Wordland. Hello, and welcome to Wordland. I'm your host, David Oates. This week we have stories from Andy Offutt Irwin and Stuart McLean, and comedy from Nicholson May, Bob Newhart, Steve Martin, The Imagination Workshop, and Things You Need to Hear. Andy Offutt Irwin is a local guy and an international storytelling star.
It's wonderful to be in Jonesboro. I mean, of course, this is the capital of storytelling. This is it, right? This is the spot. This is where we try out new stuff and you laugh anyway, even if it's lame. It is. It's a small town, and we're in sort of a small town business, believe it or not. Storytelling festivals, Donald Davis pointed this out to me, and it's absolutely true. They do a little better in small towns. There are lots of good storytelling in big cities, but usually small towns, and a lot of us tour little bitty towns, and we're used to that. And you can walk around, and you see people that were at the show, and you talk, and you chat, and it's very, very sweet. And Jones, there's no place like Jonesboro for that. And it's different than, say, New York City. I have found that in little towns, people will take you to see things. So I was in this little town. I was up in Watkinsville, Georgia. And I was staying at the home of a chicken farmer for a gig. You know, I was working. And he said, "You want to go see the chicken house?" Sure, I'm a tourist. So we go into the chicken house, and there are 80,000 chickens. Anybody into chicken business? Anybody know chicken? You ever been in a chicken house? You've been there? Yes, sir. It's a lot of chickens in there. They put in a lot of, and the chickens are talking. Chickens talk all the time. They just be talking and talking and talking. 80,000 chickens. I'm looking at 80,000 chickens. I measure everything by a baseball crowd. A good baseball crowd is 40,000 people. You know, at a major league baseball game. That's, I don't know why I just do that, but, you know, 80,000 chickens, you know, that'd be a nice crowd. I could gig this chicken house. And they're talking, and he goes, "Hey, watch this. Andy, you'll like this. Andy, you'll like this." People always doing that to you when you're a humorist. They're always like, "You'll like this. I'm going to do something weird." I see more body part tricks than you can possibly imagine. "Can you do this with your lips?" "Yeah, you know." "Can you do, hey, watch this." We're in the chicken house. And he claps. And for about a third of a second, there was complete silence. So it's, that's kind of cool. So I felt all powerful. I could control the chickens, you know. And they got annoyed with me, and then they finally chased me out. "Get him." It was in New York City. I was working for a guy named Jerry Ulrich. I was playing at the LaGuardia High School for Art, Music, and Performing Arts. Somebody go, "Ooh." "Ooh." Like you know what that is. Good, okay. When I give you the slang term, you'll understand. It's the fame school. Let's try that again. LaGuardia High School for Performing Arts. "Ooh." The fame school. Susan, you got this audience trained. So I was, you know, so he lives in Long Island, and he has an old minivan that's really torn up. He calls it his train car. He only drives it like half mile to the train and back. And he was the choir director, vocal coach and choir director for the school. And I was doing a week-long residency there, which was such a fun gig. Man, it was fun. Because I was expecting everybody to be carrying knives and wearing bandanas, you know. "You don't understand me, Matt!" You know, really violent kind of guys who would, you know, break into a song and start dancing on the desks. And I was bitterly disappointed. They were just kind of like a bunch of kids, really. It was really fun. It was fun. But you know, getting through the city is so hard. We caught the Long Island Railroad, which was a real old train. I mean, I knew it was a commuter train, but the conductors still wear the little pill hats and punch your ticket, and we get on the train. And then we went to Penn Station. We had to pick up a subway, and we had to pick up another train. Now we're on the subway. And at, I guess it was Grand Central Station, Jerry is flying through the catacombs of New York City. He's flying. I'm carrying the guitar. He gets on a train, and the train is full. Now, I just went to the baseball game in Atlanta the other week, and it was the MARTA train, and people going, "This train is full, y'all, look." And it was not full, because if a train's not full until you can die and not fall. We're running through the city. He's on the train. I've got the guitar. My guitar case is actually kind of big. So he's on the train. He says, "Get on, man, get on." And if I don't get on this train, I'm homeless. It's over. I will never get out of here. And he goes, "Get on the train." The train is filled completely, shoulder to shoulder, crunched in with completely silent people. They are not talking to each other. They are the opposite of chickens in a chicken house. Total, utter silence. And Jerry grabs my guitar, because the doors have already bounced off of it. Something is attracting the doors. And the something is my guitar case. And he grabs the guitar, and he pulls me and the guitar into the train. And suddenly everyone is like bowling pins, but nobody falls. And then there's a third of a second of, "What the fuck, what the fuck, what the fuck?" And then total silence. Complete opposite of a chicken house. When we get to the gig, I told Jerry, I said, you know, they kind of cussed me out, but then they were completely quiet. He said, "Oh, it was over." And they were so relieved you weren't going to try to play.
Andy Offutt Irwin, Crowd Control. There are many admirable counselors in the world helping people with their problems and pain, unlike this next practitioner.
"What I want, doctor, is just someone to talk to, you know? Someone who will say, you don't have to go through another day of pain. You know, you don't have to go through another day of crying. Life is to be enjoyed, you know? You should try to enjoy it to the fullest. All I want is a friend, you know? I don't think that's too much to ask."
"Okay, I'm aware of the time, and we're going to have to stop here and just pick up where we left off next week. That's $85.
I have a question."
"Okay, I am aware of the time."
I'd like some feedback. I come here every Saturday and I tell you about how my week has been, and on my way home I think to myself, you know, hey, this has got to be helping. This has got to be helping me, but I'd really like some advice, you know?"
"Oh, well, why don't you have a seat? Come on, sit down."
"Okay."
"I think we've made progress. I think you should think of yourself as better. As a matter of fact, I think you should say to yourself, Doug, you're better."
"Okay, now I've got a problem with that."
"All right."
"My name is Dave."
"Dave, I thought it was Doug. Was it ever Doug?"
"Always Dave."
"Okay, Dave it is. That's $85.
"No, I can't believe you didn't know that."
"I'm sorry."
"I can't believe you forgot my name."
"I didn't forget your name. I never knew your name. That's different."
"You know, you go to a therapist for 7 months and you think, hey, he might not know my problem, but at least he knows my name."
"Or not, you know? And that's a reality you need to learn to live with."
"You know, I've always understood therapy to be like opening a door and walking into a room, investigating that room fully, and when you're done with that, reaching for another door. Well, frankly, I find myself right at another door that I can't open."
"Okay, well, let me get this one for you. What I think you need to do is take everything that we've learned, self-actualize it, pay me, and then go out there and just be the best Doug you can be.
Dave!
I'd like you to try Doug this week. Could you do that for me?
This is ridiculous!
No. No, no, it isn't. It's something called role-playing, Dave. It's something that I learned at the university when I was getting my diploma and my license. Do you have those two pieces of paper?
Perhaps Doug does. All right? You've been taking notes?
Mm-hmm.
I want to read them. Oh. Tell me something that you've written in that book.
Well, I...
Tell me something you wrote about me, okay? I want to know about me.
Okay, fine. You are nervous about things.
What's my girlfriend's name?
Ruby.
No.
Rubella.
Mm-mm.
Lucky?
Nope. Ethan.
That's a guy's name.
Hello.
You're gay?
Yes!
Did you tell me this?
First session!
Whoa. Wow, what's that like?
What's in your notebook?
Notes.
Let me see them.
No.
I'd like to see them.
They're confidential. No, please do not open that book.
This is a cassette tape.
I've been recording our sessions.
There are no moving parts in here. This is losing weight to the songs of the 60s. You haven't been listening to me at all.
No, I haven't. Well, who'd want to? You ought to listen to yourself sometime, you know? You know, all you ever do is come into this room, sit in that chair, and start complaining. You know, it's always complain, complain, complain. Me, 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 me. Jesus Christ, haven't you ever heard of the phrase, suck it up and go?
I have legitimate problems.
Well, legitimate problems? The starving children in Calcutta have legitimate problems. Ask yourself how many of them are seeking professional therapy.
Why are you a therapist?
I didn't think there'd be so much talking.
Well, maybe you should quit your job.
You don't quit your job.
I did.
You did?
You told me to.
Well, how's that working out?
Not very well.
Well, I'm sure you have a very supportive family. I'm sure they've helped.
No, you told me to sever all ties with my family.
How's that working out?
Not any better, actually.
I'll tell you what. The next couple of sessions are on me.
Forget it.
Look, I think you need counseling right now. No job, no family. You are in for a lot of pain.
I'm not coming back. Oh, God, wait till Ethan hears about this.
Who's Ethan?
My lover.
You're gay?
Yes!
Well, does Doug know?
I suspect Doug does. From the Imagination Workshop. More Andy O.I.
Marguerite and Uncle Charles, always just a little bit different. A little bit stranger than most people. Marguerite started getting catalogs for Christmas in August. Maybe late July now. I don't even know. I don't pay attention. They come by the pound, don't they? They do. They come by the pound. You can start. They get wadded up into the mailbox. And she was so tired of it. She was so sick of getting all these catalogs that she sort of, in a weird kind of way, canceled Christmas. She did. She canceled Christmas. And you guys have heard me talk about this before, but this is a different time. I know that Christmas dinner is always going to be January 6th. It's the Feast of the Epiphany. She cancels Christmas until Christmas Eve, and then she starts decorating. By the time everybody else is throwing out the tree, that's when she begins Christmas, because the 12 days of Christmas begin on Christmas Eve and go until January 6th. If you don't know that, that's what the 12 days of Christmas are. It doesn't begin with Advent. Advent is it's the church's reaction to marketing. Y'all can argue with me in the lobby later. Okay. But she does that, and she's been doing that for a while. And I know that on January 6th, when we go to dinner, something weird is going to happen. It always does. Well, She was missing her husband. He was talking to her a whole lot in October. Very strange time. He was talking a whole lot, and she was talking back, and they were arguing. They weren't getting along, even though he was dead. And she started missing him in a very strange way. She started missing him as soon as she decorated the house on Christmas Eve. She wanted to do something she used to do all the time. And when they were married, they would go out to the old farm, to the old white oak tree, and they would take his 410 over under 22 Magnum rifle shotgun combination. And it's the only time they ever used this gun. It was his kidhood varmint gun. It was, you know, you had to break it and put in the bullets and cock the thing. It was not an automatic anything. You know, two shots, you got to take it apart and put it back together, and two shots again, rifle, shotgun. But they would go out to the old white oak tree on the farm, and it was covered with mistletoe. And they would shoot the mistletoe out of the tree. And they'd fill up the old, before the Plymouth, the old station wagon with mistletoe. I'm talking, this is, you know, back to the real station wagon, 9-passenger, long, flat car. Nobody ever said, I rolled the station wagon, because, you know, it would stay flat. You know? It wasn't going to flip over, this big, wide, old Chrysler Town and Country station wagon. They'd fill it up. Marguerite would take the mistletoe, she'd cut it up, and she'd make sure there were at least 3 berries on every sprig, and she'd put a little white bow on them, and she'd put that in a Rich's department store shopping bag. And she'd carry that around with her everywhere she went. And whomever she met during Christmas, during Advent, she'd say, do you have mistletoe in your home? Is it? Oh, it's plastic. That's wrong. Here you go. And she became kind of known for doing that. She'd give away little pieces of mistletoe to everybody. The bank, the grocery store, the gas station, wherever she went, she carried mistletoe. And people knew they could bum mistletoe from her. You know, Miss Marguerite, you have any mistletoe? Oh, of course. Let me get it out of my automobile. And she'd give it to them. So she kind of missed that. It's the one thing about Advent that she really, really missed. So about December 26th or 27th, she cleaned the gun. She got the car, she went out, she shot a whole mess of mistletoe out of the tree. Now, you might be asking where the bullet went. And the answer is, we don't know. Well, I said, Margie, you can't shoot in the air. Well, there's nothing over there. Oh, I guess I shouldn't. They put up a neighborhood over there, didn't they? That's what happens when you're old. You think you're in the country, and you look around, and you're not anymore, you know. But she got this big mess of mistletoe. Of course, Christmas was over. Christmas Day had passed, and there was no one to give it to. There was nobody to hand the mistletoe to. So she made a great big, what she used to call a kissing ball, in the foyer of her house. And it was about 5 feet wide. So I went over there January 6th. There's this great big ball of mistletoe, little ribbons all over it, you know. I had to duck to get under it. And I looked at her and I said, hey, Aunt Marguerite, you got to do a little more than just kiss under that mistletoe. She said, that was uncalled for. That's what your Uncle Charles said.
The Kissing Ball from Andy Offutt Irwin's Crowd Control. Bob Newhart is best known today for his 2 TV series, but before that, he earned several gold records for his stand-up routines.
Anyway, I held a number of different jobs, and every job I would go to, they would always be having like a week's orientation program, and they would present you with every problem you would be faced with during your first day on the job. And now I'm going to do a little switch here, but I'll tie the two things together. One of my favorite movies is King Kong. And the big scene, of course, is when King Kong climbs the outside of the Empire State Building. Now, to tie them together, I thought What if the night that King Kong climbed the outside of the Empire State Building, it was also the first night on the job for a new guard? He had gone through a week's orientation program on the problems he could expect to face his first night on the job. I think his day might have gone something like this. Mr. Hennessy? Yes, sir. I hate to bother you at home like this on my first night, but... something has come up, and it isn't covered in the guard's manual. I looked in the index, yes, sir. I looked under unauthorized personnel and people without passes and apes and apes' toes. Apes and apes' toes. There's an ape's toe sticking through the window. Well, see, he isn't your standard ape, sir. He's between 18 and 19 stories high, depending on whether we have a 13th floor or not. Yeah, well, I'm sure there's a rule against apes shaking the building. There is. So I yelled at his feet, and I said, shoe ape, and I'm sorry, but you're going to have to leave. And then, I know how you like the new men to think on their feet, so I went into the broom closet, and I got a broom without signing out a requisition. I will tomorrow, yes, sir. And I started banging him on the toes with it, but... there are these planes flying around, and they're shooting at him, and he's only swatting at them, so I figured I wasn't doing too much good with the broom. You don't care what I do, just get the ape off the building. This could complicate things a little, sir. When he passed by here, he was carrying a woman in his hand. I don't think she works in the building, no, sir. She had kind of negligee on, so I doubt it. She's one of the cleaning women. Well, the first thing I did, I filled out a report on it. I don't want to give the building a bad name either, sir, but, these planes are shooting at him, and they're starting to hit him, and, people are going to come to work tomorrow morning, and they're going to have to walk around the big dead ape in the street and start putting two and two together, I think we're safe on that score, sir. I doubt very much if he signed the night guest book downstairs. you don't care what I do, just get the ape off the building. Well, I came up with an idea, but I'm not supposed to leave my post. Yeah, I thought maybe I could smear the Chrysler Building with bananas. Hello.
Bob Newhart with one of the half-heard dialogues that made him famous. This week, in preparation for possible budget cuts to public radio, we're including a few advertisements.
There is a segment of our society, forgotten, neglected, in need. We here at the Stephen King Institute are specially trained to treat print addiction.
I caught my wife in our bedroom one day, reading Danielle Steele. If that wasn't bad enough, I found out that she had joined a Book of the Month club, and when that happened, I knew I had to call the Stephen King Print Addiction Recovery Center.
With our facilities, we can treat each person for their particular ailment.
My name is Dave O, and I'm a reader. I'd like to say I'm a recovered reader, a reformed reader, but I know that it's only through God's grace that I get through each day without letting my eyes linger lovingly on sentences in print, like the one about Mickey Spillane and the tall blonde girl with the gun.
When your family falls prey, there is only one place to turn.
I lost my home, my car, my job, my family, my goldfish Pete. And then I called the Stephen King Print Addiction Recovery Center. They have taught me once again to enjoy simple pleasures like sock darning, bake sales, and pro mud wrestling. Thank you, Stephen King Print Addiction Recovery Center.
So call today. Don't let the hell continue.
That was from the group Things You Need to Hear, a sketch group I was in long ago. Other performers were Nicole Sikora, Bill Householder, and Richard Still. Stuart McLean is Canada's great public radio storyteller. For years, he shared stories on his radio show, The Vinyl Cafe.
It was a Friday morning, a couple of months ago. A couple of hours before lunch, Dave was sitting at the counter of his friend Kenny's cafe, Kenny Wong. Wong's Scottish meat pies. Things were slow in his record store, and Dave was bored. He'd wandered down the street thinking he'd have a coffee and a chat. And now he was sitting at the counter polishing off a cup of Kenny's rice pudding. And Kenny was nowhere to be seen. Kenny had gone to the food terminal for bok choy. Dave was talking with Yet-son, the cook, the only other person in the cafe. They were talking about Kenny. Kenny, who'd rather go to the food terminal four times a day than have bok choy wilt in his fridge. Kenny, the titan of tightness. Dave and Kenny had argued about this often. Cost you more in gas, said Dave. You gotta watch the pennies, said Kenny. No one watches pennies like Kenny Wong. A year ago, Kenny spent a week studying his take a penny, leave a penny tray. And at the end of the week, when he worked out he was losing maybe an average of 25 pennies a week, the tray vanished. Pennies add up, said Kenny. You're nuts, said Dave. You're going to miss a quarter a week. Pennies add up, said Kenny again. Kenny learned this at his father's knee, old Henry Wong, who ran the Half Moon Cafe in Burnt Creek, Alberta. Henry had learned from his father, and they had learned their lesson well. It was in their DNA, never, ever waste. Oh, yeah, Kenny is the real deal. He sits at his grandfather's oak desk. Keeps it right in the middle of his cafe. The desk is so prominent that first-timers often pull a double take when they walk through the front door, wondering if they've wandered into an office instead of a restaurant. Kenny, sitting there at the desk, surrounded by his piles of paper and his calculator and the framed photos of his family and old newspapers and travel brochures for trips he'll never take and pamphlets for who knows what and his grandfather's abacus, which is somewhere under the piles. And of course, his ever-present phone. Kenny, talking on the phone and waving at them, come in, and barking at the kitchen staff all at the same time. Kenny giving everyone the old 1-2, like he's an air traffic controller, not the owner of a neighborhood cafe. There is no one quite like Kenny Wong to make you glad that you're alive, which is why Dave has been so worried about him. Because all winter, Kenny hasn't been himself. You wouldn't know this if you didn't know him well, but Dave knows him as well as anyone. So Dave knew. He let it pass for a while, but after a while, he couldn't let it pass any longer. It's nothing. I'm okay, said Kenny. But it wasn't nothing. It was something. And eventually, like all things, it came out. Remember Ronnie Burnside, said Kenny one morning. This was another morning. Same time, though, 10:15. Same place, too. Dave sitting at the counter, scraping away at another empty bowl of rice pudding. Kenny at his desk this time. Ronnie Burnside, said Dave. Big guy, baseball hat? No, said Kenny, that's Eldon. Ronnie's the little guy with a big comb over. Comes in for coffee every morning, said Dave. Used to come in, said Kenny. You seen him recently? Come to think of it, said Dave, Because he doesn't come anymore, said Kenny. The other day I see him on the street. You know what he's carrying? A baby, said Dave. Worse, said Kenny. A latte. Kenny got up from his desk and walked behind the Formica counter and picked up a coffee pot from the Bun-O-Matic warmer. Reached for a thick white porcelain mug. No one wants coffee out of a cup like this anymore. They want, you know, I don't even know what they want. Lattes, said Dave. Whatever, said Kenny, shrugging morosely, swinging the coffee pot back and forth like a priest with a censer. Drops a coffee, arcing all over the counter. Dave leaning to the left to avoid the spray. Kenny, finally noticing what he's doing, oh, he says, I'm sorry. And he holds the pot up. You want a cup? I'm okay, said Dave, pointing at his sweatshirt. I've had enough. Lattes, said Kenny, shaking his head, discouraged. Kenny walked around the counter and he sat on the stool beside Dave, staring at his coffee intently. Neither of them said anything for a moment. Then Kenny said, it's getting harder. When they don't come for coffee, they don't come to eat either. Dave said, are you in trouble? Kenny shrugged. They sat at the counter for a while, and then when people started coming in, they moved to a table at the back. Kenny did most of the talking about the old days at the Half Moon. Everyone in town came to the Half Moon for their morning coffee. If a rancher had to leave town before the auctions were over, they'd ask Kenny's father to pick up their check and deposit in the bank for them. These were white guys, said Kenny. My father wasn't even allowed to vote in those days. They wouldn't have asked him to join the Elks, but they trusted him with their money. No one's ever asked me to do their banking, said Kenny. It was the middle of the afternoon before Dave finally left. He'd been gone from his store for hours, but he didn't go back there. He walked around for a while. He and Kenny are friends. But they're more than friends. They're both little guys trying to keep little businesses going in a world that doesn't favor little guys anymore. Dave used to believe that that was their strength. The motto of his store said it all. We may not be big, but we're small. But if Kenny tripped and fell, how long before Dave stumbled? No wonder Kenny was depressed. How could a little neighborhood cafe keep afloat in a world of franchised coffee shops? Kenny was drowning in a sea of lattes. And now Dave was walking along the street thinking, a latte would go down really well right now. with cinnamon or chocolate? Cinnamon, thought Dave. And a teaspoon of sugar sprinkled on top of the foam so it created a crunchy crust. He couldn't, of course. It would be a betrayal. But it sure would clear his mind. By the time he opened his store, Dave was dying for a latte. There's a little Italian place in the west end of town, up by the train tracks where they unload boxcars full of grapes every fall. A warehouse built in an old railway station where all the old Italian guys come in their trucks and their station wagons and stuff them full of wooden crates of grapes for their homemade wine. 2 hours later, Dave walked out of the warehouse with a huge bronze cappuccino machine and stuffed it into the back of his car. Dave took it to Kenny's the next morning, early. Parked in front of the fire hydrant in front of the restaurant, bounced in and dragged Kenny out. Come on, he said, I need your help. Come on, come on. The two of them humped the enormous cappuccino machine in and they stood it on the floor beside Kenny's desk. Kenny stared at it dubiously, at the black levers and the whirling copper pipes. What am I supposed to do with that, said Kenny. Try it, said Dave, see what happens. Okay, said Kenny, okay. They cleared a spot on the counter by the front door. It's beautiful, said Dave. Kenny didn't seem so sure. Come on, said Dave, everyone's doing this. How hard can it be? What's the worst thing that can go wrong? Kenny was down on his knees. Kenny was staring at the guts of the huge copper dome. I'm going to need a plumber, said Kenny. Dave didn't go back to Kenny's for a couple of days. He didn't want Kenny feeling pressured. Didn't want Kenny to feel as if he was hovering over him. but he couldn't stand not going. He waited until he couldn't wait any longer, and then he headed over. Kenny wasn't at his desk. There was a boy Dave had never seen before standing beside the huge cappuccino machine. The boy was wearing a white apron and a starched white shirt. He had his sleeves rolled up. Dave sat at the counter. "Where's Kenny?" Kid shrugged. Dave said, "I'll have a coffee." "What kind?" asked the boy. "Regular," said Dave. Boy stared at him blankly. "Cream and sugar," said Dave. There's no actual regular," said the boy. "I can do latte, espresso, Americano, cappuccino, mochaccino, frappuccino." Dave held up his hand. Dave said, "I'll have a latte." Boy said, "What size?" Dave said, "Medium." Boy shook his head. "I'm sorry," he said, "we don't have medium. We have miniature, middling, and tubby." "Tubby?" said Dave. "Who is going to order a tubby?" Boy shrugged. Dave said, "I'll have the middling." Boy reached out for a smallish cardboard cup. Dave frowned. "That's kind of small for a middling, isn't it?" Boy smiled and nodded. Boy said, "That'll be a tubby then?" Then he said, "What kind of milk? Regular 2% or skim?" "Regular," said Dave. Boy looked irritated. "What?" said Dave. "I wasn't finished," said the boy. "We also have goat milk and soy milk." Dave shook his head. "Regular," said Dave. "So," said the boy, "medium, regular, regular latte." Dave nodded. "You want a double shot?" said the boy. "It makes it stronger." "Just regular," said Dave. "Medium, regular, regular, regular," said the boy. Dave nodded. "Syrup?" "Syrup," said Dave. "We have vanilla, hazelnut, almond, buttery caramel, peppermint, and rock cod." "Rock cod," said Dave. "That was a joke," said the boy. "Just plain," said Dave. "We have sugar-free," said the boy. "Plain," said Dave. "Medium, regular, 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 plain," said the boy. "Right," said Dave. "Foam," said the boy. "Plain," said Dave. "Whipped cream," said the boy. Dave shook his head. "Extra hot," said the boy. Dave squinted. "As opposed to original, tepid, or breezy," said the boy. "I'll have the original," said Dave. The boy had been writing all this down. He looked down at his pad. "A medium, regular, 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 plain, 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 no foam, original." Then the boy said, "Decaf or regular," said Dave. Boy wrote that down too. And Dave stood up and he said, "Okay." And he started to walk toward the back. "Okay, I get it," he said. "Where are you? I know you're here somewhere." He was talking to Kenny, of course. Kenny was watching from the kitchen with three other regulars. "Where'd you get the kids?" said Dave. "The college," said Kenny. "He's in theater school." "What took you? We've been waiting for 2 days. "Very funny," said Dave. It was late now. Kenny's cafe was closed. They were sitting in Dave's record store, which was closed too. Dave was sitting in a small burgundy armchair by the cash. His shoes were off. Kenny was tilted back on a chair with his feet up on the counter, and there was a half a bottle of red wine right by Kenny's feet. There was some sort of jazzy saxophone playing softly in the background. "That was pretty good," said Dave. "But it didn't change anything." "Made me feel good," said Kenny. "That's a change." "And?" said Dave. "And what?" said Kenny. "It's been a week," said Dave. "And is it helping, the machine?" "A bit," said Kenny. "But I'm not sure it fits my place." "I have another idea," said Dave. "Wow," said Kenny. "That cheers me up." Dave showed up at Kenny's a week later with two huge cardboard cartons. "Takeout cups," said Dave. "I don't do takeout," says Kenny. "You do now," said Dave. Dave pulled one of the boxes open. "Look," he said. The cups were bright red with a yellow circle in the middle and big purple letters that read, Wong's Scottish Meat Pies. There is so free lunch. Check out the bottom, said Dave. Kenny turned the cup over. There was a piece of metallic tape. Scratch and win, said Dave. 12 of them say free lunch. Kenny, the titan of tightness, looked horrified. You want me to give away lunch, said Kenny? Just try, said Dave. 12 lunches are nothing. What'll it cost you? It'll cost nothing. And if it increases business, just try. Kenny sold his first takeout the next morning to Leon, a cop. Leon had just ordered a coffee when his radio went off, and Kenny said, I can put it in a takeout for you. Leon said, I didn't know you did takeout. Kenny said, there's a scratch and win. Leon was back the next day. Says, I want a free lunch, said Leon. Kenny swallowed and nodded. There was another winner on Thursday. 2 on Friday. By Monday, Kenny had developed a twitch in his left eye. I'm just tired, he said. On Wednesday, a couple of guys Kenny had never seen before came in and ordered takeout coffees. They were back at lunch because one of them had won. One of the regular guys from the bank who sit at a table in the front every lunch made a big deal of holding his china mug up and scratching the bottom with a spoon. Next morning, a guy came in and had a club sandwich and walked over to the cash and instead of paying, said, give me a coffee to go. Kenny reached for the cup with a sinking feeling. Kenny said, cream and sugar? The guy shook his head. The guy said, hold the cream and sugar. Then the guy reached out and took the cup from Kenny. He said, hold the coffee too. Guy flipped the cup upside down and scratched, and then he smiled and he handed the cup to Kenny and he walked out without paying. I don't understand, said Dave. Which part don't you understand, said Kenny, who stutters when he gets really upset. Every second cup is a winner. He didn't add, you idiot. That part was implied. They must have had all the winners at the top in a bunch, said Dave. Just mix up the cups. Just mix up the cups, said Kenny, with his eye fluttering wildly. Just great, I'll mix up the cups. Next day at lunch, Dave walked over to Kenny's thinking everything probably had settled down. And there was a lineup out the front door of the restaurant and down the street. Uh-oh, thought Dave. He tried to get in to see what was going on, but a guy at the front of the line stopped him. Back of the line, buddy, we've been waiting for an hour. A kid at the back of the line told him what was happening. It's a crazy promotion, he said. Every second cup, maybe more, is a winner. It's like free food in there. The restaurant was jammed and noisy, and there was food everywhere. Looked like a children's birthday party in there. As Dave watched through the window, Kenny burst out of the kitchen carrying 2 plates in each hand. As Kenny pushed across the crowded room, people were tugging at his elbow, trying to get his attention, and Kenny was twitching like a marionette. Dave headed back to his record store. He called the printer. What could have gone wrong? He'd asked for 12 winners. He had the invoice in front of him. You didn't ask for 12, you asked for 1 and 2, said the printer. There was a smudge on the paper between the 1 and the 2. The printer had read it as a ratio. As soon as he hung up, the phone rang again. It was Dorothy from Woodsworth's Books. Dorothy said, there's been an explosion at Kenny's. Dave threw the phone down and sprinted down the street. The cappuccino machine had blown. There were coffee grounds everywhere. There were also 2 cats on the counter lapping up the milk. Kenny was prostrate at his desk, weeping and twitching. His white shirt was damp and stained brown. The floor around his desk was littered with the takeout coffee cups, which had clearly been stomped and crushed. How can I help, said Dave. Don't need help, said Kenny, blinking like a wombat. Everything's just great. Then Kenny stood up and walked right through the crowd into the kitchen, moving like a zombie. Dave flew around the restaurant taking orders, serving people. 2 hours later, when the cafe had emptied, he went into the kitchen looking for Kenny. But Kenny wasn't there. Yetsun pointed at the back door. Kenny was in the alley. He had a fire going in an old oil drum. He was dropping the takeout cups into the fire, one by one. That was more or less the end of it. The lineups disappeared, and the crowds thinned out, but not completely thinned out. Some of the new people kept coming back. The ones who don't like to be rushed over their coffee, the ones whose tastes might include a fried egg sandwich one day and Szechuan tofu the next, the ones who don't want to decide that before they sit down. Big businesses are always looking for growth and return on investment. People like Dave and Kenny know you can't keep getting bigger and bigger. People like Dave and Kenny thrive on diversity. All Kenny needed to get back in the black was a couple of new faces in his restaurant each day, and he got them. That and the added profits from the lattes, which Kenny still serves, charges $5 each. One small thing more. In a month or two, Dave is going to show up at Kenny's with an envelope full of cash from the till in his record store. "I'm going away tomorrow," he's going to say, "and I wonder if I can ask you a favor. Could you take it over to the bank for me?" Kenny will look at him and laugh. Kenny will say, "You are such a jerk." And Dave will say, "What are you talking about?" And he will hand him the envelope, and Kenny will take it and put it in his pocket, and he'll walk over to the bank just like he's been asked, thinking as he walks along the street that the world is a good place. And his grandfather would be proud of him and his little cafe, and would like it that he cooks rock cod in the old way, the way his father taught him, with fresh ginger and soy sauce and garlic and honey. That's what he'll be thinking of as he whistles out of the bank. And that's when he'll get his idea for next spring's promotion. It'll come to him right out of the blue as he's walking back. It'll be even grander than this year's. He'll hand out gift coupons with every latte, redeemable down the street at the little record store. A free record with every coffee. Thank you very much.
Kenny Wonk's Contest by Stuart McLean from the Vinyl Cafe album Autopack. Lately, Steve Martin is better known for acting, bizarre New Yorker essays, and a play, but he started out leading people through official oaths.
"Hi, Crime Stoppers! Usually we say, hi, Steve, one more time. Hi, Crime Stoppers! Let's repeat the Crime Stoppers oath. I promise not to bully my friends. I promise not to leave my keys in the car. I promise not to depreciate non-taxable items brought forth in the previous tax year. Good! And now, let's repeat the non-conformist oath. I promise to be different. I promise to be unique. I promise not to repeat things other people say. Good.
Steve Martin in his stand-up prime. Nichols and May have known their share of intellectuals.
You know it very well.
Better than myself in some ways.
It's beautiful.
It has a fantastic peace.
Yes. It's serene. It has a kind of mathematical certainty that's almost sensual to me.
Yes, an order, a finality, finally.
organization.
She plays it with just incredible clarity.
Yes, she does.
Yes. Yes. I remember I used to have to sneak in my room to hear it when I was a kid. You know, my family was your usual, you know, dull bourgeois family, of course. And there was really very little else for me.
Yeah. I guess my story is the same. My family was middle class,
yeah, sure,
ordinary.
Yeah.
And there was no relating. There was proximity, but yeah, no relating.
Well, no, it can't be. The pressures are just incredible.
And of course I had a great many difficulties, which I've been trying to resolve.
Yes, and I think you are. I mean, I haven't known you that long, but...
Yeah.
You know, when you consider the... Well, the ambivalence of the woman's role today...
Oh, it's incredibly ambivalent. It's so hard to resolve. It's so hard to acknowledge the fact that aggressiveness need not be hostile.
That's right, yes, no. Adler was no fool.
No. I always thought of him as a fool, but he said some good things.
Yes, no, I've reread him recently. There are insights there.
Yeah. Too many people think of Adler as a man who made mice neurotic.
No.
He was more.
Much more. Can you move over a little? I'm falling off the bed.
I'm sorry.
A great deal more.
Yes, he was. I like this.
Oh, yes.
Marry
him? Yes. Yes. An amazing comment.
Yes, the social insight. You'd think that music would inhabit, you know, because it's not verbal.
Yes,
but
yes, you know, it's a, you know, when Huxley has Turton committing suicide to the last movement of the 15th, I understand that so well.
Oh.
Because not that it has any programmatic content.
No.
Just the...
There is always another dimension to music. And it's apart from life.
Yeah.
I can never believe that Bartok died on Central Park West.
Isn't that ugly?
Ugly, ugly, ugly.
You got enough room?
Yeah, I do nothing.
You want the pillow?
No.
No.
No, I have my problems in relating. I do.
Yeah, well, which of us doesn't?
But I think I can work through them. I've been trying.
I think a relationship is so difficult.
Oh.
I mean, you try and fail and try and fail. But to... Try to get a dynamic approach to it so that there are no absolutes necessary for your own,
yes,
you know, power satisfaction.
Well, of course, there are no absolutes in a relationship.
No, that's the thing to be remembered always and always.
Oh, I love this part.
Yes, here.
Yes.
Almost hurts.
Yes. Beauty often does.
Yes. What a shock when I discovered Nietzsche, and he said that in a way.
In many ways, when I read Thus Spake Zarathustra...
Yes.
A whole world opened for me.
I know exactly what you mean.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Oh, did that happen to you, too?
I know exactly what you mean.
I had never known such things existed,
yes,
you know.
Yes,
just yes.
A door opening...
Can I have a cigarette?
Yeah, they're in my pocket.
No, I'll go get them.
No, I'll get them. Just wonderful. I don't often say this, but, you know, for the whole last 2 hours, I really have had my anxiety allayed.
Really?
No anxiety.
I feel, when we were talking in the bar, that we've made an adjustment so rapidly.
So quickly.
Yes. I think we're going to have a relationship.
I think we are.
Bach to Bach from Mike Nichols and Elaine May in Retrospect. We'll be right back after this brief announcement.
Thank you. Check the ambuloid manipulators. Where in blazes is our power?
Mr. Scott, what's your status?
Captain, he's breaking up! We're experiencing a complete loss of power. Our readings indicate the dilithium crystals are completely drained and useless. I don't understand it, sir.
I need a warp 8, Mr. Scott. How soon can you respond?
Captain, you're warped if you think I can give you anything. We're about to boldly go where no man has gone before. Ah! Say your prayers, boys!
We've come aboard the Starship Enterprise and secretly replaced those old dilithium crystals with new Folgers crystals. To see if anyone would notice the difference.
Mr. Scott, give me a report.
Captain, I can't control her any longer. I'm afraid this is it. But what an aroma.
New Folgers crystals. They'll notice the difference.
Folgers Trek, by the Imagination Workshop from their Best of CD Volume 2.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
Hey, long time no see, Danny.
Yeah. Say, how's Jane? She ready for that baby yet? She's about due, right?
Yeah, she's over at the hospital now.
She is?
Oh, yeah. But this labor thing, man, it just takes too long, you know? I couldn't stick around.
Well, how long's she been in labor?
She's in her 37th hour. What a drag.
Say, Bill, why don't you do what Debbie and I did?
What's that?
Well, you know, we were way too busy for a long, drawn-out labor thing in a hospital stay.
Yeah, so?
So we went over to Baby Crafters.
Baby Crafters?
Yeah. You know, your baby ready in about an hour. We were in and out of there in just 55 minutes, kid in tow.
How's little Scotty doing?
Oh, well, you know, he'll be fine over the long haul. But just think of the time we saved at the delivery.
Yeah.
That's right. Baby Crafters, your baby ready in about an hour. No more endless labor. No more big hospital bills. And if your labor's already short, try Baby Crafters' new drive-through window service. It's as easy as a trip to the bank. At Baby Crafters, you seduce them, we induce them. And your baby's ready in about an hour. For the Baby Crafters location nearest you, dial 1-800-C-section.
Baby Crafters, also from the Imagination Workshop, which has now been renamed Between the Ears Radio. That's our show. So this is David Oates saying goodbye, and thanks for listening to Wordland. And thank you to WUGA for giving this show a home. Wordland is a Monkey Sound production recorded in the studios of WUGA. If you have questions or comments, please call your radio station or send email to dvdoates@aol.com. That's dvdoates@aol.com.